Making sense of resurrection. And we've been going through this topic all throughout resurrection time, which makes good sense to encounter the resurrection during Easter time, the time between Jesus' resurrection and Pentecost. And Pentecost is next Sunday. And so I want to basically pick up where I left off last message and just continue on from there. It does stand on its own, so it's if you weren't here last week, it's not that you won't know what's going on. But in many ways, it's picking up on a few thoughts that I just threw in at the end, and I want to engage with them a little bit more closely. And so it's Luke 24. We did from 13 to 35 last week, and I'd like to just go from 28 to 35 to read that section this week. And engage with the two Emmaus Road disciples and how they recognized Jesus. So after they're leaving Jerusalem, they're having this conversation, they're wondering what things are going on, they're confused, and this Jesus comes alongside them. They don't recognize that it is him, and he explains the scriptures to them. He asks them, how do you understand things? And then he explains the scriptures, all that was written concerning him. And this is what happens afterwards. By this time, they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus acted as if he was going on, but they begged him, stay the night with us since it is getting late. So he went home with them. As they sat down to eat, he took the bread and blessed it. Then he broke it and gave it to them. Suddenly, their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. And at that moment, he disappeared. They said to each other, didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us? And within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 disciples and the others who had gathered with them, who said, the Lord has risen. He appeared to Peter. Then the two from Emmaus told their story of how Jesus had appeared to them as they were walking along the road and how they had recognized him as he was breaking the bread. Just that last verse there. It'll come up in a slide when I put Luke 24:35 up there. I like the phrase, in the breaking of bread, better. That reflects the Greek a little bit more closely. And it'll become important for a message 2 weeks from now. So that's there. Where we left off. We left off with these disciples. They're in their confusion. They didn't know what had happened, and Jesus enters their story in their place of confusion. And he speaks to them, he explains the scriptures to them. And I talked last week about even in their confusion, as they were trying to figure out who is this person who has been traveling with us and what's the significance of the events that have happened this weekend, like how do we make sense of all this? In their confusion, they still extend hospitality to these two disciples extend hospitality to this stranger and invite him into their home to share a meal to make sure that this person is cared for. And in that, Jesus reveals himself to them. He, as the guest, becomes the host, and he takes the bread, he blesses it, he breaks it, and he gives it to them. And in this situation, they recognize who Jesus is. And this is the part that I want to focus on this evening. Then they told what had happened on the road and how he'd been made known to them in the breaking of bread. And part of what is exciting about a story so rich as the Emmaus Road story and all the resurrection stories really is you could preach them each week. You could come to them each week and get something new and something meaningful and something exciting and something that nourishes us for our journey, because there's nothing more significant than encountering the resurrected Christ. When I think of communion, when I think of that my experience growing up of the bread and the cup. I grew up in a Baptist church that's connected to the CBOQ, which is one of our sister denominations in Ontario and Quebec. And or that's where I was from the age of 10 to about 16. And this is like the formative picture in my mind of the communion experience. And we had those small little pieces of bread that somebody had cut up, one of the elders, the night before or the morning of, in these small little blocks. And it was filled with a lot of ceremony. The elders would come forward, and then they'd each get handed a tray, and then they'd go to the back, and then they'd distribute it, and then they'd all assemble together, and that was how they would do things for both the bread and the small cups. And I remember receiving the bread, and I am a fidgeter. I can't stand still. I like to talk with my hands. I like to tap my feet. I like to squish the small little piece of bread into almost nothing in my hand in the moments between being handed the bread and when I was allowed to partake of it. And I remember during this time, as I became more aware of the ceremony that was surrounded the communion experience, it always accompanied this kind of warning of reconciliation with other people, that you can't eat you can't eat communion without being reconciled with one another. And I always went through this process of like, well, have I offended anyone? And if so, how bad is the offense? Am I safe to partake of this? And all the while I'm squishing the bread into nothing. But that's what the experience for me growing up really was about. Or maybe not what about, but that's what my experience, and that's what's in my mind about communion. And it really, to be honest, the significance of the breaking of bread and encountering the resurrected Lord in the context of communion only really came alive to me as I started preaching messages each week, which had to transition into the communion meal. It was always kind of locked in this sort of ceremony of squishing the bread. And then it has come alive for me in the last 3-plus years worshiping with you and trying to bring this opportunity alive each week in the context of wrestling with the scriptures. I used to think it'd be hard to transition to communion each week, and in many ways it's not. In many ways I feel my preparation mindset has been shifted so much that each message kind of longs for the communion meal to be the end point. And that's why I really appreciate this, and it has come alive to me in ways that I never would have expected four years ago, to be honest. I talked last week a little bit about sat, took, blessed, gave thanks, broke, and gave, as being key verbs that link these passages together. Luke 9 is the feeding of the 5,000. Luke 22 is the Last Supper meal before Jesus' arrest and crucifixion, and Luke 24 being the Emmaus Road story. These verbs are used. Gave thanks is used in Luke 22. These verbs in the succession are used in these passages. Some variation as far as verb form, just minor, but it doesn't do anything to take away from the link that I believe Luke is, and many others with me, are putting in these passages. With the Last Supper, sit is not part of the phrase because they're already sitting, so it's implied that they're already seated. But it's this pattern that happens in the feeding of the 5,000, that happens in the Last Supper, and happens in the Emmaus Road hospitality meal that links these stories together. The word break is really interesting because it becomes in a way used specifically for this breaking of bread to have a meal together. It's not just breaking of something, it's breaking of bread as it's used in the New Testament literature. This is from a lexicon. It's actually the most expensive book I own, and it's being used to prop up my second monitor. Not because it's not worth it, because I have an electronic copy of it, which renders this $200 book obsolete. And this is what it says: break in our literature only of the breaking of blood, by which the father of the household gave the signal to begin the meal. This is in the background context of how this word is used in other situations. This was the practice of Jesus, likewise, of the cultic meals of the early Christians. This breaking of bread, this repeating again and again this table fellowship that Jesus sets out for his disciples, and how he models that in the feeding of the 5,000 and in the situation with the Emmaus Road's disciples. So the question here, what is happening? And I believe these stories are in conversation with one another. The length of the arrows have nothing to do with the significance of their connection points. But both Luke 9 and Luke 22 are in conversation with one another. And Luke 22 and with Luke 24 and Luke 9 with Luke 24, these stories form a very complex picture of what Luke is trying to say to his readers, to the hearers of this text, to the early church. And I want to look at this through the context of Luke 9 mostly today. And this passage here is, this is the outline for Luke. Luke 9, we have verses 1 to 6 with the sending out of the 12. And then we have Herod's question. And in that passage, he's wondering, who is this one that stories are told? And becomes the question that Peter answers in verse 18 to 20. And then it goes into the next section in Luke's gospel of Jesus' suffering and the transfiguration. So this is the same word, just highlighting how I see the structure fitting together of Luke 9. We have Herod's question and Peter answering that declaration. It's only revealed to Peter or he only is fully able to understand this sort of impulse of who Jesus is as the Messiah after the feeding of the 5,000, after he goes through this process of taking the loaves and fishes and breaking them, blessing them, and then distributing them. This is what happens in Luke 9. So it becomes this moment towards this understanding of who the Messiah is. But he's not fully revealed. They don't quite understand yet what it means for Jesus to be the Messiah. And that's why it's significant that we have this suffering and glory section immediately following it. Jesus is suffering. He predicts his death. He says that this is what is going to happen. This is what it means for me to be Messiah. It's this progressive understanding, this progressive revelation, as they learn more fully who Jesus is and what it means to follow after him, what it means for him to live out his mission. And so as these stories interact with one another, we have Luke 9 as this beginning of this revelation of who Jesus is as he distributes this food to the people who need it, and then how he sets this as the new covenant that he is establishing for his people. It's a little bit fuller revelation. They hopefully have a little bit more understanding of who this Jesus is now as he's about to go to the cross. And Luke 24 being that full disclosure, the Messiah, it being necessary for the Messiah to suffer before entering his glory. And so the structure of Luke 9 echoes in the questions and the pattern that happens in Luke 24 to highlight how Jesus is being revealed to them and how he's been revealed along the path. But now it's this full revelation on the other side of the cross, on the other side of Jesus' resurrection. And this is the story that Luke is pulling on as he describes the circumstances that happened to the Emmaus Road disciples. And it's this multifaceted picture which is significant as we approach the table, as we come each week to consider what God is speaking to us, as we consider the revelation of the resurrected Christ in our own lives. We often talk of the symbol of the bread and the cup, and often in a lot of the conversation, symbol is used almost as a playing down the presence of Christ in what happens and what transpires in the meal. And of course, I'm inadequately alluding to the big debates of Reformation, post-Reformation time. But symbols are powerful. Symbols are not just symbols. They speak far more than this. What I mean is, a symbol isn't locked in the elements that they are. A symbol carries far more weight, far more significance, and is in some ways more real than you can fully explain or grasp. And so I have this quote from N.T. Wright, and the picture of N.T. Wright is from a time close to when he wrote these words. I looked for a picture of him 20-some years ago. This is from New Testament People of God. And he writes here, "These symbols, as they act invisible reminders of a worldview that normally remains too deep to casual speech from the actual grid through which the world is perceived. They determine how, from day to day, human beings will view the whole of reality. Symbols are not just the elements. It speaks to a reality far beyond on what is right there. It speaks to something greater, something grander. That's why we have country flags. The maple leaf just isn't locked in what is hanging on a maple tree. It speaks, when we talk about the nation of Canada, about something we view as ourselves, as a people, as Canadian people. What does it mean to be Canadian? And so symbol is not just locked in what that element is. It goes far beyond to become something that is inexpressibly real to a person's identity, to a person's way of being. So symbols are not just symbols. They're something far more powerful, far more grand, something far more significant. And I think of the meal, the bread and the cup are not locked in what they are as elements. They are symbols that point to something far more real, far more present, and that being our resurrected Lord. And we have the opportunity in these symbols to declare that He is alive, that He is present with us, that He is present in our community. He is present as we partake of this bread each week. A lot of these debates and terminologies that happen when discussing various traditions in the various communion table are people trying to figure out how to explain a mystery, something that is beyond the ability to fully express, like kind of like Wright says, that you can more than just casual speech, and that almost too deep for casual speech. And that is what, when you try to put words behind things, sometimes words are inadequate to fully express the power of a symbol, to fully express Christ's presence in the bread and in the cup. There's something mysterious, something wonderful, there's something powerful that happens as these become the symbols for Christ's presence in our community. And so, yeah, we have different ways of expressing this and different ways of trying to seek the right terminology to make sense of what happens, to make sense of these symbols and their power in our lives. And so it makes me think, when does the bread become the bread? Or when does the cup become the cup? And so, not trying to do product placement in the context of a sermon, but this is the package of bread that I make each week. I pick it up at various stores depending on supply, and put in my office. But is this the bread yet when I have purchased it for the purpose of communion? Or does it become the bread when I go to the bread maker in the kitchen and pour a little bit of rice milk and olive oil and egg and put it together and press the start button? Or is it the bread when I take it out and put it on the cutting board to dry? Or is it the bread when it gets cut and then brought to the front of the communion? Or is it in the bread when we close in prayer? Is it the bread when we take a piece off for ourselves? Is it the bread when we ingest it? I'm not going to go any further than that. But when is the bread the bread? Or when is the cup the cup? We try to use words and terminologies to make sense of this grand mystery of the fact that Christ is present in our community, that Christ made himself available to us, that he reveals himself again and again in our liturgy, in our experience, in our worship, in our singing, and in our partaking of the bread and the cup. The power power of a symbol is that it can speak to many situations and many circumstances. We all understand symbols a little bit differently. It's like a painting. If you stand in front of it and you had each one of us say, "What do you see in the painting?" We would all express something different. We would all, what we'd express about the painting is influenced by our life, our circumstances, how we view art, how we view that specific period of art, how we view color. All these things are at play when we would be answering the question about what is going on in this piece of art. And so it is similar with the table, with the cup, with the bread, that it speaks to different situations and different circumstances. Christ is revealed to us in our place, in our different situations and circumstances. That is the power of the symbol. It's the power of coming to the table each and every week, because it doesn't speak or because it has the opportunity to speak each week, each moment, each day into our specific situations and our specific circumstances. For Christ to reveal himself to us in a new and fresh way in each and every encounter that we come to the table. It makes me think of, we've been dealing with so many of the resurrection stories, and each one of them has their unique personality, their unique story, the unique circumstances and situations that are found in the story, and that is how we are as people. We've all had different experiences and different situations over our life, over the last week, over the last hour, even over the last few minutes. We're all unique. But we all can gather as individuals around these symbols which speak to the resurrected Lord in a real, powerful way that addresses our concerns, our needs, our hopes, our disappointments, our longings, our joys, depending on where we are at as we come. We each have the opportunity to participate at this table together and to have Christ revealed to us in a new and fresh way. I think of the Emmaus Road disciples in this process of how they recognize it only after that happened, and like the breaking of the bread, and then it made sense of their lives, and it made sense of their confusion, their disorientation. And I find in our opportunity to respond in our moments, we have that opportunity to allow the Spirit to speak to us and to shape us as we consider how Christ is being revealed to us for this week, for the week that has passed, and also for the week that is ahead, recognizing that this is what we needed. This is what this is the way that Christ has been revealing to us all along. Yeah, so that's my thoughts, my reflections on making sense of the communion table, that we each every week have the opportunity to encounter the resurrected, revealed Christ in our lives, and for his word to speak into us in a very real and powerful way as we engage his symbols. Our bread is gluten-free and lactose-free for any who have intolerances, so that we can all gather around the same loaf, the same elements, and partake with one another in this opportunity to experience the resurrected Christ. Excuse me. We have hand sanitizer both at the back and at the front, and if you'd like to write out prayers, we have prayer cards at the front, and with each week we invite you to respond as the Spirit is guiding you. If you need to move about, if you need to stand up, if you need to sit down, we invite you to respond as the Spirit is leading you. And when you're ready, come forward and encounter the resurrected Christ for where you are, for where you're at, for your own story, for your own situation, and allow that encounter with his presence to comfort you, to guide you, to strengthen you, to send you as the Emmaus Road disciples back shouting his praises and declaring his glory.